football is life. That's why we're here to talk to you about Ted Lasso. My name is Declan Patrick Aloysius McManus. I'll be your host today. And joining me is a fantastic full coaching staff. We have my assistant coach, John Maltz. Hi, John.
Thank you for having me, Professor McGonagall.
You're quite welcome. We have also joining us assistant coach Guy English.
I'm the Thierry Henry of coaching.
Shut up, Thierry Henry.
Shut up, Thierry.
And our special assistant of coaches is it's Tony Sindelar. Hi, Tony.
Orion's belt.
Stay cool, man. Act cool.
They were so cool.
We are here to discuss the latest episode of Ted Lasso, which is season 2, episode 9, Beard After Hours. A slightly unorthodox episode, some might say. At which point, we're going to do a quick, really quick, super quick recap that I think Tony's going to just take care of to make sure we're all on the same page. But we'll talk more generally because this is an odd one.
Yes. All right. So, Ted Lasso, Beard After Hours. This is a somewhat trippy, occasionally dreamlike episode focused on Coach Beard. The episode starts off with reminding us how the previous episode ended, which is Beard's feeling weird and going to go off on his own rather than traveling back with the team. He then sets off on basically a night of adventure, including dealing with weird feelings toward his currently ex, Jane, meeting up with the gang of Richmond fans at the bar and going on adventures with them, following a strange woman in red, being beaten up by Jamie Tart's father and friends in an alley, dealing with a paranoid hotel clerk, all kinds of strange things, getting caught in the rain when his key breaks into his home, culminating in finding a rave underneath a church and meeting up with Jane and engaging in some serious dancing and hula hooping to show up the next day wearing some fancy pants that suggest that at least some of what we have just seen actually happened.
Yeah,
that's a high level overview of what Beard After Hours was about.
I think that's kind of a good place to start, which is the question: how much of this do you think is real?
What was real?
So I feel like I have the meta answer to that. Yes, I have the meta answer to it, and the kind of this is one of two in the production of Ted Lasso season 2. There was the thing where they had basically the season planned, and Apple came to them and suggested two extra episodes, which was confirmed is the Christmas episode and this episode, and they do have that kind of slightly stapled on feel where. Not things don't necessarily happen in the continuity. Obviously, this does fit in terms of it happens after their defeat to Man City, but not a lot happens in terms of like changes in characters' connections to each other or moving along the various threads of the season. So this is it's a very different kind of episode from that. My personal reading of it is a large chunk of what we saw. Did not happen, or at least did not happen as shown, due to the kind of repeated dreamlike qualities of the episode, the strange things that Beard says and does, the repeated shots of a strange CGI blue moon. So my take on it is like stuff happened, and you know he's got pants at the end, but maybe not. Maybe little to nothing of what we saw happened as we were shown it. I guess. My read.
John,
I felt like almost all of it happened. Obviously, he's having some sort of hallucination about the announcers. And I question as to whether or not they were there at the bar at the end, you know, at the dance club at the end. That blew my mind when they showed up and then he sort of gives, you know, points at them and like, I see you guys. And I understand
they serve
like,
food,
you know,
here?
As if they had been there the whole time, and they seemed to understand that they were there the whole time, which is very odd. But I thought everything else seemed to happen, and particularly the stuff with the guys from the bar, because I feel like the culmination for them, the experience of being able to get to run around on the field, was very real and very Ted Lasso.
Yes.
That scene that where we see them frolicking on the Richmond field kind of weirds me out because I think it's the one scene or series of shots without Beard, which is kind of weird and jarring. But it does still also have I think, elements of the dreamlike quality where, like,
sure,
they're in this back alley and there's the weird no-entry metal door and there's, like, a strange Quasimodo-esque guard wearing a black leather jacket just standing by the door ready to let them, leading them through, like, a catacomb-like tunnel.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. yeah.
It's not normal, really. I mean, and there no. are, you know... I'm sure there are, you could, if you were Freud, you could come up with some birth metaphors there.
Sure.
Yeah. I think, like John, a lot of it happened, and I kind of don't care. I don't think it matters.
Yeah, and I think you're not supposed to.
Yep, that's right. Fair.
It's, you yeah. know, like, yeah, it's weird and stuff's trippy. Like, obviously the moon, there's a bunch of weird stuff that happens. Like, his interaction with the woman who wants to fix his pants is weird. Yeah. It's weird. But it's not...
Yes. Like, and there's, like, a tonal shift where it's like, are we in, like, a film yeah, noir right. movie now? What's going
well,
on?
Yeah. So I did not read the title of the episode before I watched it. Again, I watched it at, like, 5 o'clock in the morning because I was sleepless. And I hit play, and I'm like, this is just After Hours. Which, yeah. guess what? It, you know, which is, if you guys haven't seen the movie, very similar, follows Griffin Dunne. Yeah. Terry Garr is a character in that who plays mm-hmm. something similar to the woman in the red dress that we saw. You know, and it's just this cascading series of failures until he, you know,
yeah.
walks into yeah. work the next morning.
Yeah, it made me, I had read the title and then kind of forgot about it. And then when I was watching, I was like, oh, it's After Hours.
Yeah, yeah.
I have never seen that movie. Either. I will say that my mm-hmm. one possible complaint with this episode is that there were a lot of things where I felt like I was missing out on a reference to something in a mm-hmm. way there that I was slightly distracted
yeah.
by.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Be it the musical cues or imagery or like, it, you know, I don't know. At times I was able to lose myself and not worry about that, but there were other times where it's like, I think I'm supposed to be getting something here and I'm not. And whether it's a yeah. metaphor or a specific reference to another piece of media, yep. you know, like the repeated dropping of the keys, it's like yeah. this, that has to mean something, but I'm not an English major. I don't know what this means. yeah.
He's losing. He has no home.
So, I mean, I like that, but it was perhaps it sometimes knocked me out of the what was going on.
I was a little take go down.
Yeah, oh, I just want to say, it reminded me a couple points of, and Tony, I know that you've seen the show, some of the episodes of the show Spaced, the Simon Pegg,
oh, yes.
Frost sitcom.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Such
a good show.
There's a rave episode of that one that this reminded me a little bit of, and there are a couple mm-hmm. other ones where they have like the weird night out and like keep running into people and weird stuff happens. So I had like mm-hmm. It's like a sort of an element of that it made me think of at times, but it does, I agree with you that there were definitely times where it's like, it seems like there's another layer here that I'm not quite putting yes. together. But then again, it was interspersed with these moments of utter absurdity that I found hilarious. Yes. Like, I love the scene where the big beefy boyfriend shows up to give him his stuff back and is like, they bond. Yeah, and then he scoots
guy.
Away on his little scooter.
On a scooter,
and I
right,
so
right,
laughed yeah. so hard at that because the image is just so absurd.
Yes.
I love that guy so much. Just, he's built like a brick shit house. He looks awesome. Like,
yes.
He
looks like an MMA fighter.
You know, we also do. We do Biff, which is basically about superhero shows. That guy could be a villain for sure. He looks,
oh, yeah.
yes.
he looks awesome. Yeah. He's so cool. And yeah, on the scooter, and he's generally trying to be nice. And it sort of mixes the Terry Garr thing. Like, I think there's a similar circumstance in that. It's been a while since I've seen that movie. But like the notion that he's initially angry and then chills out and then is trying to do the right thing by Beard mm-hmm. and make amends. I liked it. I liked the way he fought. Like... He just mm-hmm. keeps dodging the punches and knocks him down.
And then takes the guy out.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the kind of very strange, like, basically he can't go more than 10 minutes without bumping into some weird character, be it somebody who's wandering yeah. around, you know, the city at night, or into people that he's, you know, like he's lost wandering down the streets and his friends drive by in a limo and give him a ride, right? Like, it's, there yeah. is mm-hmm. the kind of like...
It's improbable given a city the
sequence.
Size of
yes.
London, right?
Yes. Sure. And it's like it... That's yet, part of the kind of like, this doesn't make any sense, but I'm with it, right?
And yet we've all been in those situations where it's like, that's yeah. weird, but that just happened, you know? Like,
yep. I was somewhat surprised. I guess I had thought what threw me in the episode was that he gets home and then he goes out. Like, I just, that was kind of a strange to me that he made it home. And we do get, you know, I think one of the things that's fun about this episode, we get a little bit more of Beard, who is such a mystery. But at the same time, it's not like, let us tell you everything about Beard. It's like, let us give you a glimpse into Beard without, like, completely explaining him and, you know, his strange apartment with the Burning Man poster on the wall and the, you know, the chess table. And
I didn't find it weird that he would get home and then go out. Like, he got home, he was bummed out. He I guess, was that show?
I thought it was weird because it seemed like he
was clearly weren't saying what they were. Sorry, what?
Mm-hmm. I thought it was just weird because he seemed like when he was leaving Ted that he was going to go immediately out.
Yeah, I thought he was going to go on a walkabout, basically.
That's what I thought at the end of last episode. And then when he walked home, I'm like, oh, I guess he just walked home. Which is, you know, a reasonably long walk. Wait, didn't they have to take a bus there?
He took a bus at one point. He takes the subway.
Right. Yeah, so he does that, and I'm like, okay, well, that was him blowing off steam, and then he got home, and it hadn't satisfied him. Like, he hadn't managed to get his head out of a bad space, because the TV...
And he's still having a jerk
to him, so he's like, okay,
and there is the kind of... There's the interesting thing where it's the... It is both... He is dealing with the... Kind of, it seems like it's probably not as big a deal, the failure of they got completely creamed in the game. But it seems like that, there's a little bit of that, but there's a lot of, I don't know what I'm doing with my relationship with this Jade person.
Yeah, I think that's the driving thing and the catalyst
those
is
mixed
the game.
Together, yeah. Along with some heavy uses of alcohol, make for some
and you get the weird things in his brain. Tempting space. Moment that you have to see the break from reality, right? Because you're like, well, he's home. Everything's normal, and then as soon as the announcers start talking about him, you're like, all right, he's passed out on the couch or something, right? Like, that's... And the rest of it's just a dream, but there's certainly enough evidence that we see through other people's eyes to suggest that most of it is not, at least.
Right.
But, again, yeah, it's unclear how much of it...
It could all be a dream. He could already own those
pants.
That's
true. That's true. He could own those pants.
But, again, I don't think it's important.
No, I do. I think it's academic. Did it happen or not? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, right. Right. Doesn't matter. Feels like it happened.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe this is stuff that happened to Beard in the past that he's piecing together in his dream. It doesn't super matter to the story.
I think given the fact that we have scenes where he's not there, I think indicates that it's not a dream though.
Yeah, certainly I believe he hung out with those. I believe he went out to the bar. Like, he goes home and then he goes out to his pub. That's not unreasonable if you're in a bad mood and you're like, you know what, I just want to go drink in the pub. And so, then those guys come up, you know, and I can see that mostly transpiring the way that it does. Sure. You know,
so we had a lot of time with the pub gang compared to very little before. So it's kind of fun in that this episode is fleshing out several characters who are kind of present, but not given a lot of time. I assume that those characters have names, but I don't know them. So
they
I'm
have names.
Think of them. I'm going to think of them collectively as the pub trio. The pub trio who all they may or may not have names in my head, but clearly have extremely distinct personalities.
I really enjoy those guys, and I'm glad that we got to spend more time with them, because they are you worry sometimes about secondary characters, right? It's like, if you spend too much time on a secondary character, do they lose part of the charm, right? Because you can kind of get away with making a secondary character not a straight of two dimensional, but a caricature, right? Like, you like, let's emphasize one or two like qualities of this person, and then let's you know, not have to worry about making them a fully fleshed out three dimensional character. But I feel like they still manage to pull it off and make you feel like these guys are still interesting people, but without even like removing their caricature status entirely, right? Like, the whole thing with them playing pool with the guys is amazing.
I assume they work in finance, guys.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. From the very beginning, Baz and Jeremy want to ask Beard about football, and Paul wants to ask him about the existential nature of the universe.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I do. I mean, it's effectively Homer's Odyssey, right? Like, he's trying to get home, basically.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they start off kind of as his crewmates, like, I'm taking the big chunky guy, the big shithouse guy, as like the Cyclops sort of thing. the lady in red is the Sirens. Like, there's definitely a pattern. Like, they didn't just take this for no good reason, or the structure it for no good reason. And what I really liked, and it was very much a Ted Lasso moment, that he sort of sends him to this address and with just, you know, tell him that Coach Beard said it was okay. And he just gives them such a huge gift. Like, he just, you know, he's in a bad mood. He has no real reason to be super great to these guys. He's already been pretty great. They've had a wonderful night.
I feel like he gives them a series of gifts, right? In that he's like, what do you want to do? Like, it's this thing where Beard is kind of, he is lost, right? He's literally, he's not with Ted, who we basically always see him with, right? And he is dealing with the loss of the game, and he's dealing with his, things are messed up with his relationship, and he doesn't know what to do. And so he is operating from this, like, what do you three want? What can I, like, give you? And they say, like, let's go to this weird club that I don't understand how that, what... Is that what clubs are like? I don't know.
It's private clubs.
Okay, I'm willing to believe that such a thing exists. I find the name Bones and Honey ridiculous.
I think that's
a metaphor or a reference to something. Are there bones and honey in the
honestly?
I don't
probably
know.
Probably it's an Odyssey thing. I would not be surprised.
Yep. But he both says let's go do it. Provides the trick for how they're going to get in. And, you know, they have I thought the kind of great little moment where they take the elevator up and they're like, we don't belong here. And he's like, knock that out.
Yeah.
Do you want to be here? Then, yeah, you belong here. I'm going to go buy you expensive beers. Let's do this. So it was coming from this, like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing with my life, but I'm going to help the three of you do some wild, ridiculous things this night that you can
I think part of it is that Beard as a character is a... He is a facilitator. He's the assistant, right? And he is always helping Ted do things and acting as sort of Ted's sometimes conscience, sometimes guide, sometimes, you know, friend, etc. And I think he falls naturally into that role again with these guys where he's like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know that I can help you in some way. And that's what I'm going to do.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the other nice Ted Lasso moment or... as the ethos of the show is when they're in the limo, they tell him that, like, eventually they did just tell those finance dudes,
right?
Yeah,
and they're like, they were kind of into it because I guess at that point, like, the ice had been broken and they were having fun, and they're just like,
and they said, we were invited to the estate, and the guy's like, I don't know what I'm gonna wear,
I did.
And that, I mean, again, that's the Ted Lasso play with, like, it seems like, are they hustling the guys? Are they being hustled by the, you know, jerky Oxford guys? And it's like, and it's like, no, they're like, they're best buddies. And it's like, they literally are like, we took them for all their money, but now we're great friends and, you know, riding around in a limo. Yeah.
I liked
it's
it
like,
because
we
because...
conned our way into friendship.
Right. Because tricking them feels like not the Ted Lasso way. And so just that they resolved it off screen and, like, you know, same thing with the big ass boyfriend guy resolved the problem off screen by just having a conversation with his girlfriend, who you have to sort of believe knew what was going on. And she was kind of she was trying to piss him off somehow, maybe because he'd been cheating all the time in the past. Like, that is a weird couple with a weird, like, it's weird that he gets wrapped up in that somehow. But it kind of, I can kind of see it, like, her playing some weird game with him, and, like, it's totally
not.
Well,
he mentions, too, they're like,
she's
they're
just,
having a
she's
baby,
just a lady
too,
who
right?
hangs out
at
private clubs.
She's out drinking at a bar.
Yeah.
Seemingly drinking at a bar.
You know, she's just a lady out to collect pants.
That's right.
What's the big
deal? That's me, too. With,
you know? We all have hobbies.
I love it when she tells him to run, and he has this look like, oh, not again.
Yes.
Like,
not again. And he does the kind of roll over.
Like, he often
goes
into strange women's houses and then is told to run.
You believe it, though. Well, he pulls the same move later with Jamie's dad, right? Where he's like, you know, he's trying to talk him down. And he does the, or, and then he just turns around and runs.
Yeah. Well, there's kind of the delightful, like, kind of Beard kid. Well, because it's the failures and the successes, right? I mean, he talks his way into Bones and Honey. He convinces the people that he's a professor at Oxford. And then later, he can't convince the old lady to, like, pay for his bus fare,
right?
It's the, like, spectacular successes and then kind of mundane
Can't get
failures,
the hotel guy to
live. He can't get
a phone
at a hotel. Right? So it's like his successes are, he jumps off a building into a dumpster and doesn't die.
Pretty sure that
his
didn't
successes
happen.
Are, I don't think so. Don't do that at home, kids. No. His successes are outlandish and perhaps unbelievable, and his failures are mundane and kind of pathetic. And it's the juxtaposition of those that is delightful.
There is a Bones and Honey, I'm just Googling. this while we're talking.
Thank you, Bolt.
There is a bones in anything that you could probably squeeze out of the Odyssey, and that is when they burn Achilles, they... If you haven't seen the Odyssey or read the comic book,
if you have not heard, it's unless you've heard it spoken aloud by a blind poet, it's really not
I guess they smother his body in unguents and sweet honey, and then when they burn him, there's nothing left but the bones.
Yeah, I also was trying to figure out if bees and honey could be Cockney rhyming slang for money, because honey rhymes with money, and that's how. But it's not exactly right. But who knows? I mean, there may be something else entirely going on there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
that's right. Scholars will start. We're doing this as a episode. You know, a day after it aired, the PhDs on this episode will will be in press within years, and we can all revel through that.
Yeah. And this show is not the deep. The show is not above like Jane's last name is Payne, which is on, like you know, like it's not a. It luxuriates in giving things away, just naming stuff.
Well, his name is Coach Beard, because he has a beard, but that's also his name, but we don't know his first name.
Right. It's just Coach.
Yeah.
I am a little confused about what they are trying to tell us, if anything, about their relationship, other than it's complicated and it goes back and forth.
I think
that's it. It's complicated, and also, and in a way, like, because I was like, that might be the only continuity thing in this is... they're back together, but also I'm willing to believe that the next time we check in on their relationship, they're broken up again. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think there's some interesting stuff in here about, like, how does Coach Beard feel about himself, which we maybe never thought about.
Well, the Greek chorus is telling us how he feels about himself. Thierry Henry's like,
you're going to need a
real dark there.
Yeah. You're going to need a pep talk in order to kill yourself.
He basically suggests that he should kill himself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right. I mean, he's having a crisis of faith at the end. He goes to the church.
You know, it's him in his head, obviously. Yeah, right.
And I mean, I assume the Greek chorus is kind of. I guess you more accurately labeled them a Greek chorus. I was kind of thinking of them as like angel and demon on your shoulders or whatnot.
Sure.
Demons.
They also shoulders he were played blames... by Statler and Waldorf, basically.
Right. Yes, they're just
that
on
is
one
actually,
shoulder.
Those are that's lopsided. Who's on my shoulders?
because he's blaming himself for the loss, even though he's one of four coaches and not that right. Yeah, he's pretty, which is weird because he seems in so many other contexts to come across as kind of
unflappable,
confident, and unflappable. And it seems like, I mean, I guess the answer is he, you know, those things. Not everything washes over him because he's not.
Well,
showing.
He's suffering too, right? Like all the characters, are in their way suffering.
And we see him.
Sam, maybe I don't know.
We see him last season at the end of last season get frustrated with Ted about not winning, right? And he sort of takes him to task about that. So clearly,
kids. We have
that's important to him, right? Yeah. There is an element of the game and winning that is important to him, and so that plays
into
it.
That makes sense to me. That like he's a coach who's about strategy. He like his satisfaction is in winning. I mean, whereas Ted is happy if everyone else is happy, or at least Ted will present that he's happy if everyone else is happy.
Well, Ted wants to make a great team, and Beard wants to win, which is both great goals, and that's probably why they're great. They're
compatible.
You need, they're a great team.
I would argue
exactly. You need both. Yeah.
Yes, but
like,
and right
Thierry
now,
Henry is
Ted
telling
is
him
kind
that
of getting what Ted needs. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Thierry Henry keeps lecturing him, saying like you shouldn't be a pushover. Like you should be more assertive. You should sort of just don't let Ted run all over you with his warm, huggy blanket sort of stuff. And that was a blowout. Like 5-0 is embarrassing.
That's a bad score in soccer.
Oh, like, it's
that's
although not. I was not surprised. Like Man City's an amazing team. Like it would make sense that they got stomped. And soccer's like that. If you play a much better team, you will get destroyed. You may win because it's weird. It's not luck, but the scoreline is so slim at times that, you know, like a weird bounce can even things out a little bit more. But 5-0 is like, that's trouncing. It's brutal. I even like the big guy at the end, and he's like, I'm not a Richmond fan, but
but still.
He says Mamma Mia, which I found the most adorable thing. Mamma Mia.
No. I like their interchange where he's like, you can keep the pants, they look good on you. And Coach Beard says, I know.
Again, he does have that confidence, right? He has that weird confidence.
He does. Well, it starts to make me wonder, is that real or is that just surface? I even kind of wondered, again, with the kind of dreamlike qualities, he goes out for this night wandering around the town in his coach garb, which I was like, do you not own any other clothes, Coach Beard? I'm willing to believe you don't own any other clothes.
Well, he was just going to the pub,
and they have their... Yeah, that's true. And they have the ridiculous, yeah, like, let's throw bulky blazers, yeah, and scarves on to get into the
But you're still wearing your coach gear underneath.
Still wearing his sweatpants, yeah.
He's sweatpants that he tears, yeah. So he ends up at a church, and he prays, and the rain stops at just the right moment such that he can hear the thumping bass of the techno underneath.
He makes the Madonna
cry.
Can
someone explain to me how many raves are actually under, like, is that church a front? What's going on there?
So she sent him a photo earlier, if her in front
he
of
did
that,
have the cross, image of cross, the neon right, cross right, in his yeah, text. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if raves actually operate
it's not
under,
a thing I've heard of.
But whatever.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'm willing to believe there is an abandoned church somewhere. That seemed like a functioning church. So,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it does seem a little weird, but whatever. Who cares?
And of course, there's some quality hula hooping because
I liked
Coach Beard is apparently a big hula hoop fan.
Yeah. I kind of like the religious aspect to it. It didn't seem religious to me so much as like, I don't know,
crisis of self,
which is
faith or
yeah, something. Like it wasn't, you know, he wasn't quoting scripture. I don't know, like it really felt I'm communicating with the universe more than, you know, and he's even being a goof about like fish multiplying
still,
and frying.
Still
well,
was
even
cynical.
Hello God, it's me, Margaret, kid. Yeah. Is a nice,
and he was still cynical, but he was like, instead, I'm stuck here with you.
Yeah.
I liked
that
it. That's
a good line.
Yeah, I am curious to see what people think, because people can be weird about religious stuff. But
it's
like,
you know,
it didn't strike me as
Dan. You read
so
reviews.
Much more spiritual
I checked
in a
it.
Way.
Dan, you read reviews. I checked it on what various folks on Twitter and Incomparable Slack and stuff, and it seems like people are a little bit mixed. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people loved it. I think some people loved it more than I did. I did see some people down on it. I mean, I think I get why some people didn't like it. Some people are like, oh, I'm going to rewatch this season a million times and I'll skip this episode, at least one person said. And, you know, I kind of get the thing that this episode doesn't have, which I really love in a lot of Ted Lasso episodes, is the, like, really great character moments between the different characters bouncing off each other. Mm-hmm. And this has some of that, but not to the... It has different stuff. So if that is what you want or need from Ted Lasso, I could see how this would be missing.
It's a formula.
I don't know.
Break,
having watched
sure.
it twice, yeah, it's a big jump in the equation. As basically, I mean, the weird, not weird, but the acoustic cover of the theme song lets you know, like, this is a different episode different type of episode.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, I watched it twice, and there were jokes I caught on the second time, and there's still things I don't quite understand. So to me, it's like I'll be happy to watch this.
Yeah,
one again.
I thought it was right. I thought it was,
but
interesting.
It is a break from the equation. Whereas, say, the Christmas episode, which was also kind of one of these, you know, bonus episodes for the season, felt a little less of a break from the Ted Lasso equation in terms of what we get with the characters doing each other.
And to me, not as good. I didn't like that episode nearly as much as I liked this one, even though this was very weird. And Karen, my wife, we watched it together last night, and she didn't like, I don't think she liked either of these episodes.
either I can
see
why.
The two, you know, ones that are sort of out of sequence.
I appreciate it as a break from formula. This is not the Ted Lasso show that anybody expects, or maybe even wants.
Yeah.
But it was, for what it was pretty cool and interesting, and it's, I think it's sort of challenging to ask people to be like, is any of this real? Like, what's happening? Who knows? There's clearly stuff that just is breaking the fourth wall, like Thierry Henry all the time. Like, there's a bunch of weird stuff that is hard for people to just absorb into their regular watching. Or, you know, what's a very, very good example, but ultimately sort of a conventional sitcom, like workplace comedy style, workplace drama comedy, I guess. It's hard to label it, but
and you're always
it may be hard for some.
There's
people.
A convention to it, and this is not part of that convention.
Right, and
in
the convention,
I admire it to that.
The convention is important in some ways because you keep in mind that the for better or worse, and I know John, you and I talked about this elsewhere about the Christmas episode. Like, the conventions of this show is that it is taking place in our reality, even though it asks us to believe that our reality is a very different sort of reality, right? Where, like, you know, somebody like Ted Lasso can exist, and those kinds of, you know, it's an optimistic form of our reality. And so you've already been asked to sort of accept that. So I don't think that necessarily taking the jump here is a huge leap, but it is a very different flavor of that reality, right? It is an absurdist moment. Yes, and yes, that is in sort of like a, I'm about to sound pretentious and then cite Bertolt Brecht, but like it is a thing where it was like,
Dan, are you adjusting your glasses right now?
I had to get some special glasses for this. But like, you know, alienation is a sort of technique in a lot of those films, which is like deliberately doing things that take people out of our reality. And I feel like there's an element of that that's happening here where it's like, we're going to deliberately challenge you. Like the fake moon, right? Like it is at several points and clearly that it's not even the moon, right? It's in front of a building at one point. It's like, it looks like a sign almost. Right. And you're like, well, that's clearly not real, quote unquote. So you have to sort of reevaluate. And I like that. I like a challenging show every once in a while. It doesn't necessarily have to be every single episode. And it is, I agree, brave of them to try and like give this a shot. And, you know, I feel like if you got like a 10 episode season, they ask you to throw a couple more episodes in, you're like, well, where is a place that we can put an episode where it's not going to mess with what we're doing in this overarching story that we're telling?
And so I think, I think that's the issue for some people is that last week we had Sam and Rebecca get together. Sure, shout out if there ever was one.
The reveal for Ted's father, past trauma.
We also you
so
know,
we had all these kind of big things that are on pause,
right? And so they just got paused, you know. And I wasn't sure; I didn't know that this was, you know, a bonus episode. Because that scene where he walks off at the end of the match last episode felt a little weird to me.
Yeah, I suspect it
felt like it was just
filmed.
Kind of in there, and I'm like, it seems like a setup for something. I don't really get what's happening. I mean, now
there's a moment there where it's supposed to play into Ted's trauma too, right? He's worried that his friend has taken this loss so hard that he's going to go do something self-destructive,
which he kind of does.
Kind of does, and I think the structure of this season is clear too, right? Like if you look at the overall arcs, the first three episodes, which they thought were going to air as like, you know, one continuous thing, it's those, and then it's the Christmas episode. Then you have like a four episode thing in the middle. Then you have this other break and then three more episodes at the end. So I think they structured it very deliberately to put those in kind of mirrored places in the season.
Well, yeah, I kind of like that pause after the whole Rebecca.
I agree.
And
you got to absorb it a little bit.
You know, it gives you a little time to chew on it and think about it. And and that tension builds too. Like what's going to happen? What's going to happen next? You know, a lot of people don't like the fact that these drop every week either. I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a point apparently I just wanted to add this note because I thought it was interesting. There was a point very early on when they were writing this episode, apparently, where they had talked about having a scene where Beard runs into Sam buying falafel, and he's buying two, and Beard's like, "Why are you buying two?" And he's like, "Oh, no reason." And he jumps into a car with Rebecca, and they're like, "No, we decided we didn't want to show that here because I think again it grounds it maybe a little too much." But,
well, then he has Beard. Then has knowledge of the world outside of his night, right? Like it has changed the character. It's intentionally doesn't change the character. It is our look into his struggle and his existence. But
I hope this doesn't derail things too much. But you know, the Ted Lasso discourse has been exhausting to me in terms of like people pissed off about season two.
I skipped the discourse.
And I will say, it's hard. There's a lot of it, and I am not seeking it out, but it is finding me. And I will just say, I listen to Appointment Television, is a really great TV podcast. One of the contributors to that basically went off on the Ted Lasso discourse and said that like people have forgotten how to watch TV, and it's the challenge where a lot of people who basically were able to binge season one of Ted Lasso cannot deal with watching Ted Lasso episode by episode or week by week and are mad about it. And that's why everyone is upset, and get over it, people. And I was like, okay, that at least I feel a little bit better understanding the discourse, but I still don't like it and don't want to hear from them.
True Ted Lasso fans like me watched it as it came out last year. So
I guess we call it Ted Lasso.
I think I got in like before the last episode aired. But yeah, so it is. We won't go into how people don't understand second season of Ted Lasso. Yeah.
I mean, we are
probably the people
there,
that don't
Tony.
Understand
we are
second season
literally
of Ted
discussing
Lasso
Ted
like
Lasso
this.
Right now.
Also, I wouldn't be.
All right. This is discourse, and we're done now.
I wouldn't be. You know what? It would not be a complete show unless I mentioned. You know what episode this makes me think of from another show? It's kind of like the original Lower Decks episode from Star Trek: The Next Generation.
I love it.
Do you think that was all a dream?
Could be.
I love it.
You never know.
No, because she dies. All right. She gets killed.
Right.
Or does she? Because like they had talked about bringing her back.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
There is nothing in the Lower Decks episode that suggests it's a dream.
It's a parallel reality. Yeah. There's a subspace distortion.
That is actually one of the best Worf episodes. Like, the way he looks after his
I derailed. I apologize. Yeah. But it is a point of trying to get you to a episode that focuses on the characters who are not our usual main characters.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And they tease it well because they set Beard up like this. You're constantly getting these ideas these at least hints that Beard has this whole other world that he's participating in London. Yes. Yeah.
He's paid to bite people.
What time did you get in last night? Oh, I didn't. And all this other you get this idea that the coach is Beard is leading this second life.
This is like once a week this happens to him.
As I think Jason Zella said it, Coach Beard is on a different, very different show by himself. And this was kind of one episode of it, and it's much less grounded in reality.
Yeah, I think that's like a really astute point from Jason Zella, is that like it really does feel like those two characters have their own crazy adventures, and now we just got a sliver of that. And I mean, even I think last episode, when they're basically all apologizing for having screwed up or having done something detrimental or not done something great for the team, and he admits that he was tripping balls on mushrooms, like because he drank the wrong tea. Like, that is such a small, it's not like he did it intentionally, he just drank from the wrong pot, and it just gives you this weird little window into their life that, like, okay, him and Jane get into trouble, like she's a hard partying kind of person, and he kind of goes along with it. And he's probably more chill, but he knows how to roll, you know?
So. Also that he's kind of like a walking Murphy's Law, right? Where you get the feeling like just weird stuff happens to Beard a lot, and it's just, it's unfathomable. Yeah. I feel like we all know somebody who has those outlandish stories, and you're like, how, what? Like, that's a thing that happened to you?
How are you alive?
Yeah. Yeah. I've literally landed at reggae parties until like 8 a.m. Just, I've had that kind of weird experience.
That's the person we're talking about.
It's Guy.
So because Tony asked me before the show started about to explain drugs to him. And I'm like, I'm not a heavy.
No, I'm cool. I'm not a heavy drug user, Tony.
At all. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe some THC, like some edibles. Occasionally edibles, but that's the extent of my drug usage. But yeah, I mean, at some point.
Get a haircut.
I'm wearing a ponytail right now. I really do. Like, I actually look like a
guy. I can tell.
Yeah, I'm sounding like a dirty hippie. I'm moving to Haight-Ashbury, actually. It's weird. I'm about 50 years too late, but, you know.
Yeah, really. No,
you're never too late. You're just, you're early.
Have you ever been on time for anything?
Yeah. But yeah, no, I can see this. This makes sense to me. He goes home. He's not satisfied. He goes out to the bar. He meets some people. He goes in, like, and it slowly starts escalating until, you know, he's up all night being an idiot. That's not that uncommon if you're in especially him. He's in sort of a bad mental spot. I don't know what happened when he started reading the text messages from Jane. Mm. I didn't pause and read them all. I mean, I saw that she said, I love you, and it seems like she's...
People have transferred.
Yeah, she came back and said that she loved him, too.
She says,
and
I love you.
And then didn't get anything back from him.
Right.
And
so, mad. So he was screaming. I wasn't sure if he was mad because the phone died. First of all, they've got some... They are not...
I think he's mad because he missed it.
Okay, but then, But he seems kind of happy at the same time. Like, he's
happy because she loves him.
Well,
you know, like,
I know it's it was a cool, weird. I'm like, I have no idea what emotions are going through this guy right now. I mean, they're clearly
everything, heightened. Literally all
they're
of them.
Heightened. They're heightened. And yeah, that's basically when he goes to church and ends up running into with the hula hoop, which I gotta think is like him jumping through hoops to try to please her in some way. Like, I'm sure there's a bunch of
sometimes a little. Sometimes a little,
oh, here we go.
For kids.
The Odyssey.
Oh yeah, lay it down.
Just look up hula hoops in the Odyssey.
It's also a rhyming slang.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay.
No.
Okay, you guys. No. No, bring it on. Bring it on. Make fun of me. Bring the jokes on. Bring the jokes on. When he gets...
You know what I like about... When you know what my favorite thing about Guy? He's a lovely person.
When he gets back to his wife at the end, how does he prove that it's him and win her back?
Doesn't he have to... He pulls a bow
and he shoots it through a whole bunch of... Hoops.
Accents.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
accents, yeah. Exactly. So. Which, kind of like a hula hoop.
He doesn't ask. He doesn't... No, here's what it is. He does a task that only he could do.
Right.
Right.
Which
only
is,
Coach Beard could do the ridiculous hula hoop thing in the Church of
Fine.
Dance.
I just want some points for that because so. I got. Yeah, I mean, this was three. I got cornered in a hall. I got cornered in an alleyway, and I got. Yes, I took a few punches.
10 points to Hufflepuff.
Oh,
okay?
Thank you. Yeah. Perfect. So. That's not my house.
So I will just mention I enjoy the episode. It ends with kind of we leave the Coach Beard show and go back to the Ted Lasso show, mm-hmm. where we have them in the meeting and waiting for Coach Beard, who hasn't. So the scene does not start with Coach Beard. And I will just mention one. I don't know if we had seen Coach Beard or someone show up with their coffee order before, but I will just mention Coach Beard comes in with the coffee and names the three coffees, and it's immediately obvious to me
which
of the three. Yeah. Coffee. Yeah. So Ted, flat white, Roy Kent. Black, and Nate, I'm assuming, peppermint latte. So
yes. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just say that.
Well, because he's spicy, but like...
also, sweet.
He's sweet. Yeah, sweet and spicy. Like, he's got a little bit of bite to him. Black is perfect. Yeah. What did you think about doing the... yeah, I mean, that's like a no-brainer. What do you think about the Benny Hill music? First of all, Ted must have stayed up all night. Ted learned how to use Final Cut or whatever, After Effects or something.
Ted Lasso is more of an
eye. Yeah, maybe.
I thought that was pretty good. I honestly also enjoyed, my wife pointed out when we were watching at the end there, she's like, that's why he always seems to be sleeping, because he never goes to bed. And I was like, that kind of works.
I would completely believe that, yeah.
I like Ted also makes one last Blue Moon reference. He says, you know,
a game. Which is apparently very popular Man City
song. Put a little
song,
pin on it.
So that's kind of what's running.
Well, they sing it in the previous episode.
They deliberately like put it through this entire episode as sort of a through line from that.
And it's, in fact, I believe that song is what's playing when Coach Beard is getting the crap beaten out of him in the alley.
Yes. Yeah. And earlier as a weird aside, the scene where he's in the club and goes and finds that room with all the televisions, it's Claire de Lune, which is also a song about the moon, but a different song about the moon.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that room, but that's
okay. It's like a trip. It's a trip in Ball's room. It's like just...
Yeah. That was what I figured.
It's very strange.
Yeah. This is like this is our designated drug room.
Well,
so, why do we have all these old televisions?
Look, with lava lamps on them.
We got
fancier got a lot of money. Just lava lamps. It's TVs that look like lava lamps. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
We have done a thorough job with this episode. Is there anything else people want to add before we wrap up here? I think this episode of our show is really well reflective of the episode of Ted Lasso, I want to say.
Yeah, this episode is a bit of an odyssey.
It's a bit of, a little bit messy around the edges. I whatever. Do you want a creative rating system? I guess let's just go around and sum up our thoughts.
Four
and then call
Achilles.
It's
a beard. Yeah. It's a Coach Beard.
It is a Coach Beard. Yeah. I really liked it.
I think it's a Trojan horse.
Okay.
It's certainly not one of my favorite episodes, but I did enjoy it, and I found it very interesting.
Right. Okay, let's go. So, John, that's your.
I think it will land. Yeah. It will land very differently with different people. Yeah. It may be in the history of Ted Lasso, it may be a divisive episode, but I think it is enjoyable and it is very interesting. And those are good things, especially for a very format breaking episode. Yeah. So I give this a solid biff.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. I like shows that take risks and do format breaks. You know, speaking of a bit of, I liked it when Arrow did that. There was a couple of weird bottle episodes that were interesting. We just talked about Lower Decks, not the cartoon, like the actual original TNG episode. I love that. That was very cool. Yeah. Tony, I don't know if you're a fan, but Dan and I constantly reference Supernatural when it comes up to doing weird off-book episodes. Like once a year, they do it. You know, they've even had like an animated team up with Scooby-Doo. Like they do weird stuff that's really, really cool. does it always work? No, but it's cool that they try it, and I liked that they tried this, and I liked that the writers of Ted Lasso are constantly doing shout-outs to other comedic actors. Like, just they're littered through. Like, Ted's constantly being like, "Oh, I forget. I'm gonna blank on names, but like, Elaine. My God, I'm gonna
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah, like they called her like they called Ted Danson the female." Julia Louis-Dreyfus or something like they do cool stuff. Like they are willing to call out great comedy work, and writing an homage to After Hours is very, very cool. Like, that is an amazing movie. It's Scorsese.
Yeah.
It's from
Scorsese. I didn't even realize it was Scorsese until I looked it up earlier.
Yeah, today. Yeah. It's like a weird Scorsese does comedy in the 80s. Yeah. Like, he's, you know, when Joe Pesci isn't burying or getting buried alive in Casino, guess what? Griffin Dunn is hanging out with Terry Garr doing weird stuff. And I really liked it. And I liked that they took this and they did it as an homage. And Beard is the only one that makes sense because, as you know, Jason... The Snell thesis is that he is off in his own world, and his Venn diagram interacts, but otherwise he's, you know, raving with hula hoops in a church basement, and I liked it. I suspect this will be a more popular episode as people rewatch the season, and it can all be taken in stride. As it is, it feels like a break for a week, and you've got to wait for the next week to find out what's happening with our... Salmon Rebecca or whatever else, you know.
I agree with Guy. I like this episode a lot. I don't know that I want to watch the Coach Beard Show every week, but I'm okay with it being a one-off because, like I said, I like shows that are willing to take a risk and challenge us and, you know, make you work a little bit harder for that. And it's tricky, too, right? When they came back and told them they needed two extra episodes, like, well, you've broken a season. You've created an arc. Shoving an episode in the middle of a season that tries to somehow... continue those threads, I think, is very challenging. And in some ways,
I think would have been adding them to the end because you've told your story,
it's a weird epilogue. It's very strange. And I mean, I think closest in the Christmas episode is I think you get that peek into Higgins's life, right? Which is, you know, it's not quite the same, but he's slightly more connected to other people than Beard is. Whereas Beard, even with Jane, seems like more of a loner. So. I think that it's interesting to see comedy writers take this sort of shot at something that is both funny, but not in the way that the show that we usually watch is funny, I feel like, you know, by veering much more into the absurd and dark humor at times. I think that it shows some versatility. It shows some breath, you know, some range. And I think all those are good things. It's a great opportunity to let... I've blanked on the name of the actor. What's the name of the actor who plays Beard? Brendan Hunt. It's a great opportunity to give him a chance to do something more. Like, he is perfect deployed in the way that Coach Beard is deployed, but it's clear that he can do more. And so giving him an opportunity to sort of do that and have the spotlight for a week, I think is great.
And the
three guys who I really enjoy. Yeah. I think that they make a fun random group of people who you can kind of throw together and... They also have something else going on, but you get the impression that maybe their lives are not quite as eventful as everybody else as Beard. Yeah. So
I did get a little annoyed that he kept calling out Thierry Henry, because if you know who Thierry Henry is, it would be like, it's silly. I mean, if you were doing this in Canada and they kept calling out Wayne Gretzky, so like, you know, that's Wayne Gretzky. Like, everybody know, you know, or I don't know, like a football player, American, Brett Favreau. Who knows? I don't know. OJ. Who knows? Not that one.
Yeah.
But whatever. Like,
either one of those. I really want to call
pick somebody
out.
Who is like.
You're thinking of John.
Just pick somebody who's like such an incredible superstar that you know exactly who it is, and he keeps bringing that up. That will felt a little weird. Honestly, I applaud them, and I would like to see them try to do more off-book episodes, like maybe one each season. Two is a little bit much, but if there was like a different one, like would I go hang out with Keely and Rebecca on a spa day? Like, yeah, for sure. I think that would be fun. I'm only picking that because they both seem like they would go and have like a weird spa adventure in some way, you know? I liked it.
Also, happened on the way to the spot.
I want to note, I mean, we've remarked, I'm sure, in the past that both Brett Goldstein and Brendan Hunt write for the show. I just realized
That's what I wanted to say.
Also, Phoebe Walsh, who plays Jane, is also one of the writers.
I think she's new this year.
Yeah. She wrote the couple weeks. She wrote 2 weeks ago's episode. So it is, the show continually reminds me how deep a bench like it has in terms of its talent for both on screen and behind the scenes.
Everybody in the Diamond Dogs basically writes, except I don't know about what's his name, Higgins. Brett Goldstein, Nate writes for them too, I think.
I don't think so.
Has he done
Sudeikis?
I thought
I don't know. Well, he's a stand-up comic. I don't know.
Yeah. They're all, there are a lot of them.
He's probably
doing Punch-Up. Yeah, and Brendan Hunt like is basically just a utility, or like in the first season, more or less like utility player. Like, he's there to, you know, to give Ted some contextual background kind of thing. But apparently he is the biggest football fan of a lot of them. I saw him like interviewed, or he was on Seth Meyers' show, and it turns out that they all went and did like improv together before Saturday Night Live in Amsterdam, and
yeah, that's when I saw that. Yeah,
yeah, it's when Brendan Hart got really into like football, and like they all were, they, you know, they'd enjoy it, but it bit him hard, and so he's as far as I can tell, like the most football, real hardcore, fanatical kind of guy about it. So I just like this. I like the way that they're expanding his character a little bit from basically a writer who happens to sit in the room, which they kind of did on 30 Rock a lot. Like a lot of the people in the writer's room were actual writers on the show. And so I really like that. And I also didn't want to let this opportunity go without commending the actor who plays Mr. Tart, Jamie's dad.
Mm.
Because he shares, like, in the scene in the alleyway, he shares some of the mannerisms, like, and he looked the part, like, he was moving his head.
Last week, he is very good at playing the father, because I swear, there was a moment when I was watching him in his first appearance and thought to myself, is that Phil Dunster in old age makeup? Because it kind of looks like it. It looks like it could be. It looks like he could legit be his dad. So I thought
he
was
He moves
really
his head. He like he has the same intonation and inflection. Like he's doing a killer job. And he's terrifying and stupid at the same time. Like, it's good. It's really, really good. I like his performance. I mean, obviously don't like the guy, but I like his performance.
Full credit to Brendan Hunt also for pulling out the Irish accent that I thought was
surprisingly
good. Yeah. It was. I mean, speaking as an American, I'm sure it probably doesn't pass muster.
But enough to get him by all those Brits, apparently. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like they wrote that scene because it's like, hey, you know what I'm good at? Irish accent. Like they didn't.
Like the hula hooping, right? Like clearly he knew how to do a little bit, right?
Right. Like they didn't be like, okay, you're going to have to do. Like they were like, I mean, they all come from an improv background. So it's like, I'll just act Irish. Like I'll work my way through this kind of thing. And it was really effective. Like he was actually really good. And I loved in Coach Beard style that he did in fact know a whole bunch of stuff about Oxford.
Right.
You think he's screwed. Yes. Right, think he's screwed. And then he's got it nailed, which is awesome. And I loved his explanation.
I think the most important Coach Beard quote, perhaps this season, certainly this episode, I listen more than I talk.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. I loved it. Perfect.
That sums it all up.
Yep.
All right. I think that's a great place to end our discussion as well. And I would like to, of course, thank my deep roster of supporting players here. Guy English, thanks for being here.
Thanks, man. And Tony, love having you as part of the extended Biff family, man.
John Maltz, always a pleasure.
Was this all a dream, you guys?
My pants say no. Tony Sindelar, thank you for being here.
It was my pleasure. Listeners, I'll just say, if you enjoyed this conversation, but were thinking, like, I could do a little less with that Tony fellow, make sure to check out Biff on the Incomparable Network, where this trio talks about various superhero things.
Oh, thank you.
Every week.
Nobody was thinking that. Nobody was thinking that.
I'm plugging their show because they won't.
Maltz is right. Nobody was thinking that. People want less than me, for sure. Mostly because I'm a drug
addled.
I'm a drug-addled maniac, but, you know,
put down that cue card you were
making,
Tony.
That's why we love you.
Right. Oh, and Tony and Dan did a show called Complicated Profession, which covered Mandalorian and...
Nobody watched
it. It was good. I liked it.
We all do a lot of shows. I'm sure if you're an Incomparable listener, you're familiar with some of them, but there's plenty more. And if you want some great Ted Lasso merch, go to cottonbureau.com and search for Biffcast, and there are some Ted Lasso shirts you might like.
Yeah, it's not
under Biffcast because we don't cover Ted Lasso, but look for Ted Lasso.
Look for Ted.
So, Maltz is selling t-shirts, but Dan, with his highbrow literary references, is actually selling Ted Lasso ascots. So if you would like an ascot.
I know you're going to mention that he sells books, you jerk.
Go to ascot.com.
No. Oh, yeah, he does actually. Yeah, you know, he's an accomplished multimillionaire.
All right, guys, this episode's over.
We've lost the train here. I'm going to wrap it all up by thanking everybody out there for listening. And stay tuned next week for another episode of Football is Life. See you then.